Hello and welcome to Inside Education. We're online at insideed.com. I'm Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. Coming up on this week's programme.
This is going to enable the schools themselves to open up what they think are the strengths of that particular school. We don't want a one-size-fits-all direction from Marlborough Street.
We look at how changes to the post-primary junior cycle will provide opportunities and challenges to schools for promoting creativity and innovation, for strengthening key skills, and for better addressing the needs of those currently least served by the education system. But we begin with the third instalment in Barry Hennessy's series investigating the PISA test of reading, maths and science literacy, which has shaped policy interventions in Ireland over the last year.
The next wave of the international PISA tests in mathematics will be carried out among 15-year-olds in 2012. For Ireland, it may be too early to see any improvement on our recent scores, which have shown consistent weakness in maths and a significant decline in the most recent reading tests. Arising from this apparent decline in literacy here and the ongoing concern over poor maths performance, the Irish government has launched a national strategy for literacy and numeracy to be implemented in all schools starting this autumn. But just how do countries go about improving their scores in PISA, and what might be the underlying goals underpinning broader educational reform? Poland is one country that has seen significant improvement in its PISA scores following major reforms of its education system. Its success has made it something of a poster boy, particularly in Central and Eastern Europe. Dr. Alberto Rodriguez is an education sector manager specialising in Europe and Central Asia at the World Bank. He's been talking to me about the Polish example, but first I asked him about the importance the World Bank attaches to PISA overall.
We do attach a lot of importance to the ability that these tests have to tell us how education is going in many countries. We also believe that it is very important as countries embark in reforms to be able to put a thermometer of how things are going, of whether students are learning. And this cognitive test actually gives us some answers in that regard. We do like to think that the skills for the new workforce are not only cognitive skills, but they're also, for example, what's called a non-cognitive soft skills, the ability of people to work in groups, the ability of people to communicate. These soft skills, which are much harder to measure, are a very, very integral part of the education experience of a student, and indeed are a very crucial part of the success of that student later on in the labor market. Now, those particular soft skills or non-cognitive skills are not measured in these tests. They are difficult to measure. There are now some experiences and pilots of measuring some of those, and we are observing those with a lot of attention because we do feel that it will be important, increasingly important, to also venture into identifying when schools are doing well imparting those soft skills and when they're not.
We're going to talk a little bit in this interview about Poland, which is a case in point of a country that has improved its ranking in PISA, and it's also a country that went through significant reform of its educational system, and its particular case has been documented in a World Bank report. Can I just ask you this first of all? Was the World Bank actively involved in the Polish educational reform of the late 1990s?
We have been a partner with Poland for many, many years, particularly providing knowledge service. The reforms in Poland were actually headed, of course, by the Ministry of Education in Poland, and the bank actually did not participate actively in guiding those reforms. What we did do is we provided and worked closely with the Polish on providing technical assistance, knowledge, and sometimes even measurement opportunities of the progress of the reform. But indeed, the effort and the design and the outcomes are very, very much a property, in a sense, of the Ministry of Education in Poland.
What kind of reforms do you think were key in improving the country's educational outcomes?
Well, I think at the center of Poland's success is a very, very keen and broad understanding of what are the skills that are needed in this new global economy, not new anymore, but certainly increasingly global and competitive economy. And the Polish understood that it was very important to have a flexible workforce, a workforce that could change with the changes in the economy. So yes, at some point you will need enormous skills in the service sectors, and then the next year, with a change in the economic winds, it may be in the different sector, for example, in IT. The Poles understood this, and they realized that the skills that their education system was producing were actually very, very particular, were very focalized. They had a very diversified system. Somebody would become a mechanic, and that's all they would know how to do. As a result, the Poles decided to delay tracking. What that means is that the vocational and technical education that usually children were tracked into at age 13 or 14 was delayed further, and now only at age 16 students actually went into a tracking mode for vocational or professional education. And that resulted that students actually had two more full years of general education. And general education is, in fact, the basis for a flexible workforce. People who can read well, who can write, who can understand text, who can read a manual, who can question the manual, who can do mathematics. That's what they did. And their success in PISA is very much a reflection of these two additional general education years that have given the workforce in Poland an enormous advantage in terms of flexibility that, by the way, paid off very, very well in the recent crisis, where the Polish workforce was able to adapt very quickly as opposed to some of the workforces in the rest of Europe.
Do you think that a regular system of standardized testing plays an important role in improving educational outcomes?
I think so, and I think the evidence is behind that. If you look at the what's been called in Germany the PISA shock of 2001, when the PISA results came out in 2001, Germany went through a very deep soul-searching because they were simply not doing as well as they thought they were. And in that soul-searching, they actually looked very closely at the results of learning of students between all the subnational levels of government in Germany. And they were stroken by the fact that, indeed, in those regions where there had standardized tests at the end of cycles, those regions were doing better clearly than the regions where they didn't. As a result, I believe that today all but one region has standardized testing in Germany.
And that was Alberto Rodriguez closing Barry Hennessy's report on PISA for this week. Barry will continue the series on next week's programme. You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Podcasts of previous programmes can be downloaded from iTunes or from our website insideed.com. We heard just now from Barry about major reforms in Poland's education system. Well, closer to home this week, the Minister for Education and Skills, Rory Quinn, continued with his stated mission of making the Irish education system fit for the 21st century when he launched proposals to change junior cycle students' experiences in our post-primary schools. The proposals were drawn up by the National Council for Curriculum and Assessment. The Minister and the Council are trying to solve some problems with the current junior cycle, including curriculum overload, rote learning, and irrelevant and inflexible forms of assessment. They've come up with a set of proposals which will begin to take effect in 2014. Among the changes are a cap on the number of subjects taken for exam purposes, the option of short courses, and a greater role for the class teacher in assessment. Under the new proposals, 60% of the marks will be awarded for a written examination that will be assessed externally by the State Examinations Commission, but the other 40% will be for portfolio work assessed by the class teacher, supported by school-based moderation and moderation by the State Examinations Commission. One substantial change to the junior cycle assessment will be the introduction of these new short courses. These courses will be about 100 hours long compared to 200 hours for regular courses. And each short course will be designed to help students develop one or more of the six key junior cycle skills: managing myself, staying well, being creative, communicating, working with others, managing information and thinking. Some courses might be like shorter versions of subjects with a specific focus, such as Chinese language and culture, or mathematics for living and work. Other short courses will focus on themes that span a number of domains, such as sustainable living and resource management, or being innovative, product design. Short courses can include specific school learning activities, initiatives and events, such as school musicals or book clubs. To get schools started with these short courses, the NCCA will produce specifications for 6 short courses that could be used as examples by schools. But in many cases, schools will develop their own short courses to a template designed by the NCCA. The new qualification at the end of the junior cycle can be made up of 8 subjects, or 7 subjects and 2 short courses, or 6 subjects and 4 short courses. At the launch of the new proposals, I spoke to Minister Rory Quinn about the new short courses and how they will work in practice. But I first asked the Minister how the post-primary junior cycle experience for a child who is now in fourth class in primary school will differ from the experience of someone who is currently in the post-primary junior cycle.
First and foremost, they will sit their exam in 2017. That will be the end of third year for them. Because it'll start in 2014 and they're now in fourth class, so they'll come into that kind of stream where there will be a new curriculum. The difference, we say, if they've an older brother and sister who's gone ahead of them, will be when they go to sit their exam in June of 2017, they will be confined to 8 subjects, 8 examinations, and in some cases one or two of those examinations may in fact be made up of specific coursework and subjects that have been designed by the school itself. So there will be less emphasis on exams, because at the present time their older brother and sister will have perhaps done 12 exams. The exams that they do sit, whatever the combination of subjects, and there will be 3 compulsory subjects, Irish, English and Maths, it will, when they're fully marked out in the traditional way, the way Athlone, the State's Examination Commission, conducts it in exactly the same manner and format that is currently the experience of their brothers and sisters, will amount and account for 60% of the total mark. The other 40% will be based on an assessment of project work and school work that they will have done in the classroom, in the school, that will have been assessed by their teacher and moderated by the school, and moderated in turn on a sample basis by the state examination system. So that's essentially the structural difference in terms of the experience. However, the emphasis within the teaching of the various subjects that they will take, and there could be up to 12 subjects in the school, arranged across the spectrum of the curriculum as it currently is, that teaching will have less emphasis on rote learning and anticipating what the questions will be in the junior certificate examination, and more on developing their cognitive skills, their learning skills, their ability to interact with each other, to work with each other, and to communicate the outcomes of their learning. Because that's, in fact, the way people work when they leave the school system anyway, and when they leave the education system anyway.
One of the aspects of the plan, Minister, that has got a lot of attention is that credit will be given for performance, say, in school sports or in a school musical. Does that mean that if I have the lead role, I'll have an A, and if I'm in the cast, I'll have a D? Or how does that work?
No, it doesn't mean anything like that, but it does mean what many people experience in real life, that when they go for an interview job after they've left university and they've reached the basic standard rate that the employer is interested in hiring, the questions that the employer then asks is, well, tell me about yourself. What else did you do? Were you involved in sports? Did you display leadership qualities? Are you a good communicator? Were you the star performer in Joseph and his Amazing Technicolor Dream Coat? All of those things, this is what happens in real life. Employers and organisations that are in the hiring market are looking at the total personality of the individual. They take it for granted that they have reached the academic levels of qualification. What they then want to know is, what else can you do with your own skills, and how can you combine your learning with your own personal skills? Now, what we are trying to do is to align that kind of labour market interviewing thresholds with what happens in the school. And what a number of employers have said to the universities, and we've heard this from captains of industry, that people coming out of the present education system on paper may have a wonderful set of qualifications, but in reality, they don't have the necessary additional skills or complementary skills to enable them to communicate their learning, to engage in dialogue with other people, to make presentations, to work collectively with other people. And what we're trying to do is to, in fact, put in the foundation in the junior cycle of secondary education, those combined skills, along with the traditional academic skills and academic learning, which are an essential part of it.
So I'm still wondering, though, how will the recognition that I'm getting for my what would have been typically called extracurricular activities, how will that look like in terms of the credit that I will get for it in the revised junior certificate award?
Well, this is precisely the sort of work that the NCCA have embarked upon. They're going to talk to the various providers of education at the secondary level. They're going to look at what happens in most other countries within the European Union, because Ireland is quite unique in that it has an exclusive terminal examination at the junior level of the secondary school experience. So we're not inventing something totally new. Scotland, our near neighbour, has something very similar. Australia and New Zealand have gone down this road of exploration. Sadly, because of the backwash effect of the point system, the junior certificate examination and the 3 years of learning in preparation for that examination for a person typically the age of 15 has become a dress rehearsal for the leaving certificate. And the opportunities for exploration and for learning and for cognitive development and all those things, we're talking about 14 and 15-year-olds, have been compromised by trying to align them into a straitjacket or tram tracks that will equip them to get maximum points in the leaving certificate under the present system, but not necessarily develop the totality of the personality of the young pupil in question.
One of the concerns that has been expressed, in addition to our performance in maths and science, is our performance in languages. Will you make, or would you consider making, a proficiency in a language, say, other than Irish and English, a core requirement under this new system?
Well, we will talk to the 730 post-primary schools and to their representative bodies and the rest of it. This is going to enable the schools themselves to open up what they think are the strengths of that particular school. We don't want a one-size-fits-all direction from Marlborough Street. We want to look at the educational community, see what do you think are your strengths within this school? What do you, in fact, offer in this school that is better or unique or amongst the best that other schools don't offer? And let parents, in the first instance, if they have the choice, send their child to that school because that's what it particularly does. One of the great strengths of the Irish education system is that there is quite a diversity of choice for parents for different kinds of schools, teaching a standard curriculum, but doing it in a much more creative and open way under the reforms of the junior certificate, which I've announced today, than is currently the case.
And finally, Minister, would you be concerned that by devolving autonomy to schools locally, which I think would be welcomed by many people, that there could be a two or a three or a multi-tier or multi-track junior cert, that a junior cert in one school might be worth more than a junior cert gained in another school?
Well, that may or may not be the case, and some people would say that's already happening. But does it really matter if it actually draws out from the individual pupil their best capabilities and empowers them? Because it's not going to be a defining examination for the future. It has become so because what has happened is the backwash effect of the point system on the leaving certificate is now going all the way into the junior certificate exam, so much so that when a young person gets their junior certificate exam results, which are not quantified in numerical terms but in A's and B's and C's, they immediately game those results and say, well, my results are equivalent to so many points in a leaving certificate. That's part of our problem, and this is one way of solving that problem.
That was Minister Rory Quinn there. I also spoke at the launch to the CEO of the NCCA, Dr. Anne Looney, and I began by remarking to her that she must be pleased now that the Minister has approved the NCCA recommendations for reform of the post-primary junior cycle programme.
Yeah, it's a very good day for the NCCA, Sean. We've worked long and hard on this, and I think, I mean, in my history in the NCCA, this is not the first time we've had a go at reforming junior cycle. And we learned very quickly that unless you change the examination, nothing else changes. So I think that's a very significant development for us that the Minister has announced. Over time, we'll be phasing out the focus on the written paper at the end of 3 years as the measure and moving towards a more flexible assessment. So it is a good day. On the other hand, you're daunted by the work ahead. There's a lot of work to do, a lot of work to do with schools, because schools will have choices and flexibility. So we have to work with them on how they're going to manage that, because previously schools would expect the packaged solution to arrive. Now we're saying, actually, to be truly innovative, schools will have some choices, and I think schools will need support in that. So I'm delighted, but I'm also daunted by the work ahead.
So how will a class teacher notice the difference in this programme, Anne?
Okay, well, let's start with the first subject, which is English. So for the students in 2014 going into first year, the first thing that the students will be focused on are the key skills. So even in English, but in all other subjects as well as they're introduced, there's a set of skills for learning that are for every student, like managing myself, communicating, staying well. And students will be asked to focus on how their engagement with English is helping to develop those, as well as all the other objectives of English. The course will be somewhat shorter in the specifications. Now, straight away, the dumbing down hordes come over the mountain and say, Anne is dumbing down, she's giving less time to English. There's a minimum amount of time. But teachers are free to make choices about how they use the extra time. So you can use it for... Teachers are constantly talking about drive-by teaching at Junior Cycle. You know, I run into a class for 35 minutes, I run out again, I run into the next one. Students feel rushed, so now they're getting more time to engage. So that's another big difference. And then the assessment will be the big difference. The idea that something that you do in second year, a piece of writing of which you're particularly proud as a student, that really works well, that then you've got to learn that off to deliver it in the junior cert exam will go. And instead, you'll be able to present that in a portfolio that will count for 40% of your marks at junior cert. I think that's a huge change. And a big change for students, for parents, for teachers, and for the system more generally. But I think it's a step in the right direction.
It's also a huge responsibility on teachers, because up to now, if they might have been complaining about the drive-by teaching, but at the same time, there's a security in that because it's laid down and you don't have choice. Whereas now, suddenly, you're responsible for the content of a lot of the programme that you're working on with your children.
You'll have the NCCA will be still be specifying what you have to study in English, but the specifications will be less detailed than heretofore. Now, English is probably an interesting example because traditionally we've had an open course at junior certificate where teachers were free to choose the literature, and there'll still be an element of that, but there will be specific learning outcomes that are a little more specific than there are now for the English programme. And we really want to try and emphasise the literacy aspect of English given our PISA concerns. For teachers, there is more... I'd like to see it as more opportunity to exercise professional choice and judgment. But it's true. If you've got a system that works for you, it's been delivering the results, you know, you're covering the course and it works, then moving to anything different is going to be a big challenge. But I think it offers a lot of potential. I think we keep meeting teachers, and I think I said to you previously, Sean, at another interview, that we keep meeting teachers who tell us that in classrooms of, you know, 31 and 32, 13-year-olds, they feel they're the ones that are expending most of the energy, and that the energy of the students in front of them is actually not being tapped into, and that students are probably not working as hard as they could have, so they actually need a bit of a challenge. So it'll be a bit of a change for them as well. And so I think those of you working in teacher education in places like Marino will need to start getting primary teachers ready for the next generation of I think if it's 2014, then it's the current fourth class students who'll be having something different.
You've talked about the changes to English, Anne, from 2014. What about the other subjects?
English is the only one that we're giving specific examples of, not because we haven't thought about it, but we want people just to focus on the first subject. Because I think if you try and see the whole thing together for a school, it becomes very daunting, and it is going to phase in. We're not going to take all the subjects together. So, but it could be different for each subject. So, for example, you could see like a subject like modern languages for the first time in junior cert, the opportunity to give marks for oral competency and speaking the language, which currently you don't have that opportunity. And that's a no-brainer. And so in science, the opportunity for students to conduct practical works, the opportunities for students to make presentations, all of those will be there. I should say, while the teacher will be involved in providing some judgment on that work, it is of course moderated by the State Examinations Commission, which is both a comfort to the teacher, their mark is only provisional, and a very important underpinning of quality in the system and equality between schools.
If I'm a teacher of a subject that is typically the ninth or tenth choice in the junior cert selection of subjects, I might be particularly concerned with these changes, that if students don't choose my subject, I could be out of work. How would you address the concerns of such teachers, Anne?
The assumptions that underpin the question, I think, are part of the problem we're trying to tackle, that the junior cert is made up of subjects that teachers teach rather than a pathway over 3 years around which students build their learning. There are 24 statements of essential learning. Take a look at them. They cover the breadth of learning experiences from the arts to the sciences to the humanities. Students have to get an experience in all of those. If a school has a group of teachers with particular expertise in an area, they're going to have to use those teachers in their programme, in the programme that they offer. And they've got great potential and more time and more choice to how they deploy those teachers. But if a school down the road has teachers with a slightly different range of expertise, they've also got some more choices. I was a religion teacher. I'm acutely aware of the subject hierarchies that go on in post-primary education. But remember, we're only talking about a limited number of subjects for the qualification. There's no restriction on the number of subjects you can study, and there's no restriction on the number of short courses you can take.
And that was Anne Looney. And in the interview, Anne Looney referred to 24 statements of essential learning. These statements describe what is essential for students to know, understand, value and be able to do as a result of their time in the junior cycle. These statements are the basis for consistency among schools and for the monitoring and evaluation of the work of schools. Given their importance as a vision of what we value in education, I'm going to read them out on the programme for your information. Each statement begins with the student. 1. Communicates effectively using a variety of means in a range of contexts in the language of the school. 2. Reaches a level of personal proficiency in the second language of the school and one other language in reading, writing, speaking and listening. 3. Creates, appreciates and critically interprets texts. 4. Recognises the potential uses of mathematical knowledge, skills and understanding in all areas of learning. 5. Uses mathematical knowledge, reasoning and skills in devising strategies for investigating and solving problems. 6. Describes, illustrates, interprets, predicts and explains patterns and relationships. 7. Improves their observation, inquiry and critical thinking skills. 8. Develops an understanding of the natural world. 9. Values what it means to be an active citizen, with rights and responsibilities in local and wider contexts. Learns how to think and act sustainably is number 10. 11. Understands the distribution of social, economic and environmental phenomena. 12. Values local and national heritage and recognises the relevance of the past to current national and international issues and events. 13. Makes informed financial decisions and develops good consumer skills. 14. Takes initiative, is innovative and develops entrepreneurial skills. 15. Uses appropriate technologies in meeting a design challenge. 16. Applies practical skills as they develop models and products using a variety of materials and technologies. 17. Creates, presents and appreciates artistic works. 18. Brings an idea from conception to realisation. 19. Uses ICT effectively and ethically in learning and in life. 20. Takes action to safeguard and promote their well-being and that of others. 21. Appreciates and respects how diverse values, beliefs and traditions have contributed to the communities and culture in which they live. 22. Develops moral, ethical and responsible decision-making and a sense of personal values. 23. Understands the importance of food and diet in making healthy lifestyle choices. And 24. Participates in physical activity confidently and competently. And you can read this information and much more about the junior cert reforms at ncca.ie/junior cycle. The new National Certificate of Junior Cycle Education will be awarded at level 3 of the National Framework of Qualifications. The Minister announced that an award at level 2 will also be given to students who have learning difficulties from the lower functioning mild to higher functioning moderate categories of general learning disability. These are students who may be unable to achieve the learning outcomes involved in subjects leading to the junior certificate examination. In his speech at the launch of the reform programme, the Minister stressed that teachers and schools will be supported in making these changes by investment in professional development, particularly in relation to the new roles of assessment and moderation. He also remarked that care will be taken to move at a pace the system can sustain. That's it for this week's Inside Education. You can listen to podcasts of previous programmes on insideed.com or on iTunes. You can email us at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to my guests, Minister Rory Quinn and Dr. Anne Looney of the NCCA, and to my colleague Barry Hennessy. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.